Welcome to Save Our Sleep. Tizzy and the Save Our Sleep team believe it's every child's right to receive comfort, a parent's right to demonstrate love, and everyone's right to a full night of sleep. This podcast is not a medical or scientific volume, but a collection of tried and tested solutions and tips based on my many years of experience with babies and young children. Its main purpose is to help parents understand and avoid sleep problems in young babies and toddlers.
We'd like to recognise the Wadawurrung people who are the traditional owners of this region which Tizzy and myself live and are recording today's podcast on. We acknowledge and respect that they have taken care of this land and water and raised children in this nation for over an extraordinary 70,000 years. The Save Our Sleep podcast is dedicated to helping you prevent and solve sleep problems while having some fun along the way. We endeavour to discuss all things family related, starting from preconception all the way through to an adult child leaving home and beyond. Some topics may be triggering. If you find this is the case, please reach out to your or your child's health nurse or general practitioner.
Anyway, sleep cycles. So we're going to talk about sleep cycles.
Yes.
And we are going to talk about how babies sleep and so on, because it's very interesting.
Yeah, a lot of the questions that I see is, oh, my baby was sleeping really well and all of a sudden they're not, or my baby's catnapping during the day but they're sleeping so well at night.
And so it doesn't matter because they're catnapping during the day and sleeping well at night, so I don't care.
Yeah, but then, you know, night cycles kick in and all of a sudden your baby's waking up every 45 minutes to an hour and a half. So yeah. Why is that?
So, well, when a baby is first born, they do not sleep in sleep cycles. Okay. You can rock them to sleep, feed them to sleep, hold them, whatever, and you put them down, and if they're well fed and warm enough, they just sleep.
Okay.
Sometimes they're impossible to wake up. Like in the early days, in the routines, we say, you know, if you're following the routine, that means that you wrap your baby up and put them down to sleep at their routine sleep time, but if they sleep in their up time, it doesn't matter so long as they're not in their bed, because a lot of babies just sleep in the first week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks of life. When a baby hits about 8 weeks, they start to sleep in daytime sleep cycles.
Okay.
That means that you can, before 8 weeks, you can rock them, pat them, aid them to sleep. It doesn't really matter how they go to sleep. And so long as they are not hungry and they have enough bedding, the correct bedding, they will just sleep.
Okay.
But at 8 weeks, the last thing they are thinking of when they fall asleep is what they need to wake up and get from one sleep cycle to the next.
Mm.
So, look, we see this. So, well, first we'll stay on the sleep cycle subject. So, it happens at 8 weeks. Then when they get a bit older, it starts to happen at nighttime.
Mm-hmm.
So at about 6 months, we see a nighttime sleep cycle either come at 9 o'clock or at 5 o'clock in the morning. And people say it's sleep regressions.
Yeah.
Oh, it's the 8 week sleep regression. Oh, it's a 4 month sleep regression. Oh, my baby's teething. Oh, it's teething. Oh, they're waking at 9 o'clock. It's teething. You know, people have an excuse for it. Then a month or so later, there's a second nighttime sleep cycle. Then a month or so later, another nighttime sleep cycle. And eventually, your perfect nighttime sleeper who was catnapping during the day starts to wake at night. That's when nighttime sleep cycles.
Sounds like my first.
Yes. And what's really interesting is, and I've said this on many podcasts and I will say it again, you have got the mum who's going to mum's group and she has got the baby who is sleeping 2 2-hour sleeps during the day and still waking for night feeds. And then you have another mum whose child's catnapping all day, maybe even only sleeping 20 minutes a time, 2 or 3 times a day. But that baby is going down absolutely physically exhausted at 8 or 9 o'clock at night and sleeping the whole way through to 6 or 7 o'clock the next morning. And she thinks, my baby's sleeping through the night. Oh, my baby's sleeping. And you think, I'm doing my hardest with Save Our Sleep, but my baby's still waking at night. What am I doing wrong?
Mm-hmm.
Nothing. You're doing it correctly, because in the long run, her baby will start to sleep in nighttime sleep cycles and start waking all night like your first did.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one's baby, who was sleeping really well during the day but waking at night, will no longer be waking at night and will be sleeping really well during the day and now sleeping all night. And that's what you want.
Yeah. So how do we go about doing that, getting them to sleep a little bit longer? What's that look like?
When?
when the night cycles kick in? How do we, when they start waking, what do we need to do for that?
So you're talking about not having a save our sleep baby.
Well, what if, you know, for me and some other readers, but like I knew what it was, but all of a sudden my baby would sleep through the night and then suddenly they were waking.
So this is a baby who's not on save our sleep.
No, starting on save our sleep, but all of a sudden they're making noises and they're waking up during the night. Oh, do I immediately go and rush in? What do I need to do?
So a very, very good point. So no, because they don't feed during the night anymore. They haven't fed during the night. You need to not rush in. You need to give them the opportunity to resettle.
Mm-hmm.
And with first babies, you should just hear a bit of noise or whatever and maybe a minute or so of making noise and then mm-hmm. they'll go back to sleep. But we find with second and third babies, people rush in because they're so worried
that
they're
going
to wake
that.
The first one up. That they rush in and then they cause it to be a nighttime sleep problem. Mm-hmm. But most of the time people don't hear it start to happen at night. A lot of the time people don't hear it. The baby just starts to surface, go back to sleep. If you didn't have a video camera on them, which I'm very anti-video cameras, mm-hmm. you wouldn't know that they were doing it and mm-hmm. they just go back to sleep. They get from one sleep cycle to the next.
Yeah. So if your baby hasn't had a feed during the night, you're recommending that we give them a little bit of a chance to talk and snuggle back into the comforter before.
Everybody is awake during the night. It is normal for babies to be awake during the night. It is normal for babies to go down to sleep once they sleep in the sleep cycles, wake up after a sleep cycle, make some noise, move their head side to side. Some children move their head, vigorously a lot, side to side, to the point where they rub all the hair off the back of their head.
Yeah.
That's how they settle themselves to sleep.
Yep.
And it's okay for them to do that. You don't need to keep running to them.
Okay. Yeah, and I think that's the scary part. And I think a lot of people, all of a sudden, their baby starts stirring. They think, oh, my baby stopped sleeping through the night. And what I've had to say is, no, if your baby's put themselves back to sleep, that is counting through the night. And those wakes will be less loud or, and they'll start sleeping through better. I don't know about you, but I have the thing of if they haven't had a feed overnight for 7 days, then generally it's no longer needed.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yes. So if they haven't had a feed for 7 days and suddenly you do hear them in the night, mm-hmm. don't run and feed them. You might need to get them up. You might need to get them up, give them a cuddle. If there's something wrong, you might have to get them up and check that there's nothing wrong. Check
especially if it's out of
sick.
The ordinary.
Yes. Yeah. And maybe put them back to bed. But no, don't jump straight to a feed. They don't need a feed. Once they haven't been feeding at night, they don't need a feed.
Yeah. And I think that's...
Don't be disheartened if you have a baby who has slept through for 3 nights. So you fed them the dream feed mm-hmm. and then they've woken at 7 o'clock. You fed them the dream feed at 7 o'clock and then suddenly they go to bed after the dream feed, they wake at 3 o'clock in the morning and need a feed. That's okay. Sometimes they'll do 2 nights sleeping through, 1 night feed, 3 nights sleeping through, 1 night feed. You know, that's normal. That's nothing to be scared of.
No, I had it with mine. You know, we'd have 6 days of sleeping through and this is about 9 weeks. And then we'd get some 5:30 wakes and I'd be like, oh, dear, we're starting to wake up a little bit earlier. But then I noticed it was actually getting closer and closer to 7. And it's hard that bit, between 6 and 7, even 5:30 and 7, where they wake up and it might take you an hour to feed and then you got to put them back.
And that's
down.
So hard to then get them up again at 7 o'clock in the morning. And we don't want to do it. And you have to force yourself to do it. And it's really hard because it's a time when you just want to not wake them up at 7 o'clock. But then if you don't wake them up at 7 o'clock, it all goes wrong.
Mm. But I think, some parents get really disheartened because all of a sudden, their baby's starting, their baby might have woken up at 3 and now they were sleeping all the way through and now they're suddenly waking up at that time. Not realizing that it gets later and later. It's not a matter of necessarily that it's early rising. It's just a natural progression of sleeping longer, and realizing that they've gone from all the way from 7 o'clock or 6:30 without a feed and they're waking up at that time. I think it's, people have got to give themselves a bit more and their babies a bit more credit that they've gone that long without a feed. Like it's not necessarily a bad thing that they're not quite making it to 7 just yet, I would expect that around 3 months, even to solids, to be consistently sleeping through all the way through to 7 without a dream feed, if they weren't to do a dream feed.
Yeah. So, and if you're doing the dream feed, the idea of the dream feed is that it means that you you or your partner getting the dream feed at 10:30 at night, and then the next wake is 3 or 4 o'clock, which becomes 4, which becomes 5, which becomes 6, and you get them to the 7 o'clock sooner.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, a lot of people can be find that first feed in the morning, that sort of 5:30, 6 o'clock, really hard. Now, what do you do? So if they wake at 6 and you finish feeding them by 6:40, you put them back to bed at 6:40 and let them have a 20-minute sleep. Or if they don't fall asleep till 7 o'clock, wake them up at 7:20.
Mm-hmm.
But then you stay on the routine for the rest of the day.
Okay, so you don't put them down 20 minutes later.
No, you stay on the same routine. Otherwise, you're shifting everything. Mm-hmm. Yep.
And what about with the day cycles? What are sort of things that you've noticed? And we've covered it in previous podcasts, but for this one directly, what are some of the things that affect daytime sleep cycles that the parents need to look out for?
So if you are rocking your baby to sleep, or your baby's sucking on a dummy to go to sleep, or you're patting them to sleep, it's the last thing they're thinking of when they go asleep that they need to get from one sleep cycle to the next. So we have in the Save Our Sleep book different tips for what you do. So with a younger baby, if they're waking after the 40 minutes, we get them up and try and resettle them on our chest. So we take them and we keep them wrapped, and we maybe put one or two blankets over them, and we have them on your chest. And you tap their back. Now, why do you tap their back to the rhythm of your heartbeat? Because babies felt really, most babies, unless you had a medical issue, most babies felt really safe and secure in the womb. So if you wrap them, you're making them tight, like in the womb.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you pat their back to the rhythm of your heartbeat, it's like reminding them of the sound of your heartbeat. And they love it. And then if they go back to sleep on you in that scenario, we know that they weren't hungry, because a hungry baby will not go back to sleep on you. So then we look in the book and we work out what we say for when you put a baby back, when a baby's gone back to sleep on you, we know that they're not hungry. So we can then, after a few days of doing that, start to resettle them in their cot at that sleep time. Now, catnapping can be caused by a baby being put to bed when they're tired enough to have a nap. Now, a nap is a 40-minute sleep, and a sleep is anything like two sleep cycles together. So 40 minutes plus 40 minutes, or three sleep cycles, 120 minutes, is a sleep. A nap is one sleep cycle. If you put a baby down to bed when they're just tired, so they're under-tired, they're tired enough just to have a nap, they will wake up after that one sleep cycle. Sometimes you've got to keep a baby up longer so that they're tired enough to have a proper sleep. This is a big mistake people make. A lot of people follow a baby's tired signs, and as soon as a baby has a jerky movement or a yawn, they go, oh, they're tired, I'm going to put them to bed. That works. They go to sleep. But they only sleep for one sleep cycle, and then they wake up, and then you get them up, and then the next tired signs, back to bed. And they only sleep one sleep cycle. You need to look at the routine, and you need to try and keep them up long enough so that they can sleep the 2 hours. And it's not a case of, a lot of people in the support group will say, oh, I'm doing 2 hours up, 2 hours down. That's not what we're doing. We're following the same times. We're teaching them a rhythm. Mm. So it's to bed at 9 o'clock. If they're 10 weeks old, it's to bed at 9 o'clock every day. It's not 8:45 or 9:15. Yes, we say if your baby's crying and you know the next thing's sleep and you can't calm them down, yes, you can put them to bed early.
And need to put you down.
I know, I'm yawning. It's okay to put them down to bed early if they sleep to the next feed time. But if they then only catnap, you don't put them down early.
Yeah, you learn.
So you learn from it. So, and then if your child is on the routines and you're doing like the 6 to 8 week routine and they're going down at 8:30, and they're sleeping, then suddenly you put them down at 8:30 and they wake after 40 minutes and you do it a second day, I'd go, right, let's try the next routine. So sort of after 2 days, if you're following the routines, if they catnap again, I'd go, right, I'm going to try the next routine.
And that's what I've sort of noticed is some of the parents, they say they're following the catnapping advice, but they miss that part that it's only meant to be for a few days, and looking at the reasons why they wake, you know, which you've gone through. So that's good to know that it's only meant to be a 3-day period, you know, essentially of figuring out why the wakes are occurring.
This is in the young age group. Because so not if they're catnapping every sleep, but if they've been, you know, if you've done the routines, you've done the 2 to 4 week, the 4 to 6, you know, and they're sleeping well, and then suddenly they catnap one day, and then suddenly they catnap the next day. Then you go, we need to try the next routine.
Yeah.
Okay. If they've been sleeping well.
Yeah.
And of course, as we say in all of the episodes, you've got to make sure the bedding's right. You've got to make sure they're well fed. You've got to make sure, you know, all of that stuff as well. And so what can happen is if you've got a catnapper during the day, they can turn into a catnapper at night. Mm-hmm. Then they can start waking at 5 o'clock in the morning when they're a year old, mm-hmm. and not going back to sleep. Mm-hmm. And they are losing so much sleep.
Yeah.
And, of course, things like the time of the day sleep can affect the time mm-hmm. they wake up the next day, all, again, covered in the books and so on. But, catnapping is a big shock to parents at 8 weeks when suddenly they think it's an 8-week sleep regression, but it's just sleep cycles.
Mm. And, you know, sometimes it can be just as simple as that sleeping bag because they're feeling the cold just a little bit more.
Yes. So we introduce a sleeping bag at just before 8 weeks. We can... Now I'm totally yawning. You can introduce the sleeping bag as soon as you want to.
Yeah.
But it's good to introduce the sleeping bag before 8 weeks because at 8 weeks, nighttime sleep cycles start. They start sleeping deeper at 8 weeks, but also they're very aware of their surroundings. And if you, my sleeping bags have all got the same insides.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if you had the old brands that we used to have, but they had a different inside. And my children wouldn't sleep in one of them. They called it itchy. It had a different inside to the other ones.
Mm-hmm.
So I like all of mine to have the same feel on the inside. It's all got a brushed cotton inside, or maybe the outside's brushed cotton and the inside is one or the other. Anyhow, they all feel the same. So if they're going to sleep at 8 weeks and they're rubbing their feet in the inside of the sleeping bag, then if you change them, if they're not in the sleeping bag and they start rubbing their feet on the blankets, and then you change the blankets or they get older and you do something different, like you put a sheet on, it feels different.
Mm-hmm.
So it's good to introduce a sleeping bag so that they get used to the feel. So all the sleeping bags feel the same the whole way through.
Yeah.
And it's good because the last thing they're thinking of, which could be rubbing their feet on the sleeping bag when they fall asleep, is what they need to get from one sleep cycle to the other. Mm-hmm. So let's say, what causes catnapping? Catnapping is caused by going to bed when they're tired enough to nap but not tired enough to sleep.
Yeah.
Been aided to sleep. So you've rocked them, patted them, dummied them to sleep.
Yep, I was going to say that.
What else? What are our other reasons for catnapping?
The 20 minutes before the active play.
Yep. So if you're putting them to bed when they're sort of dopey, half asleep, rather than being wide awake, of course, that can mean that they last thing they're thinking of is being half asleep before they go to bed.
Mm. But sometimes it doesn't even look like it, you know, and I tell this story to pretty much everyone I meet when we're around. That for my 5-month-old, I think she was 5 or 6 months at the time, and I was doing a consult with you, and we'd ruled out many, many things. And one of the things you said to me was, you know, what's the last 20 minutes? And I said, oh, you know, she sits on my lap and we watch Giggle and Hoot and, you know, that sort of thing. And you said, oh, can you not hold her in your lap? And I was like, it's fine. She's not asleep. You know, she's awake, you know, fully alert. And you said, look, you know, this is my advice, you know. And so I thought, oh, you know, I'm going to show you up and be like, yeah, whatever, you know. And you know what? You were right. And pretty much, you know, the first time I did it, that was it. She slept, you know.
Because and it's just amazing. You had been sitting last thing before bed watching Giggle and Hoot.
Giggle
it always went off at 7 o'clock, didn't it? It was like
ABC, it was like that last 10 minutes, o'clock. You know,
and beforehand. You'd sit with her. She'd get nice and relaxed, be starting that sort of this is my going to sleep signal.
Yeah.
Sitting on mum's lap, getting ready to go to bed, and then you would put her to bed and she'd be half dozy.
Yeah.
But then when I said to you, no, I want you to change that, you put her to bed and did she start yelling?
Initially.
And what happens is when I talk to somebody and they say that the bedtime ritual, their child isn't using them, it's definitely not a sleep cycle problem waking up during the night. And then I say, well, let's change it. So just before you put them to bed, I want you to take them in the bathroom. I want you to brush their teeth. Then I want you to take them to the window, talk about the cars in the street or the trees or whatever you want to talk about, and then put them into bed. And then you go, oh, no, my child's screaming. I go, yes, that was the problem. We found the problem, you know.
Yeah.
So their child had been going to sleep from calm, half dozed. They didn't even realize. And then you've changed the going to sleep ritual, the bedtime ritual, and they suddenly start yelling, you realize that was the problem, even though you didn't realize it was a problem.
Mm-hmm. Now, what about, you know, when you're rapping and they're starting to cry?
Oh, and that's a really good point, which you would have seen me talking about recently. Mm. So babies, no routine. So when you start rapping them and they start to cry, often we start rapping them and they start to cry and you think, they don't want to go to bed. Like they're fighting sleep. They don't want to go to bed.
Well, my baby doesn't want to be wrapped.
Yes. And I've recently discovered it's because they're going, where's my frame? Where's my comforter? Where's my friend? And if we start, when you go to wrap them, if you put the comforter next to their face as you go to wrap them, they calm down. It's like they wanted their comforter.
Yeah.
And it's like they're saying, hurry up with the wrap, hurry up, get the wrap on. I want to go to bed. I want my comforter. But a lot of parents panic and stop wrapping them at that point because they think that they don't want to go to bed. They think that they're crying because they don't want the wrap on, when it's actually the opposite. They're crying, get the wrap on quicker. I want to go to bed and be with my comforter.
Yeah, and then they're sort of stirred because they're trying to snuggle into the comforter. And
And so, yes, so sleep cycles play such a big role in following Save Our Sleep.
Yeah, and I think you can't, you know, sometimes parents think, oh, my baby can self-settle during the day, but then all of a sudden night cycles kick in and the baby doesn't, you know, is not settling back to sleep. And I don't know about you, but like when we go back and look at the day sleep, it's they've been aided somehow that it's not replicated at night. Yeah. Yes. So, you know, it's really good to go back over everything and have a look through.
And then some people have this thing where they go, I don't use the sleeping bag during the day, or I don't change their clothes during the day, and they put them to bed in like a waist. Babies don't like waists. It hurts them. It's a waist around their tummy. Like, it's like they don't like it rubbing on them. Yeah, I think it can actually give them reflux.
And the singlet's right up.
And I think the waistline can give small babies reflux, and that can stop them sleeping well during the day as well. And, you know, so some parents say, I don't wrap them during the day, I only wrap them at night. Now, you need to keep it the same. You want them to have really good day sleeps. You want to wrap them during the day. You want to wrap them if they're at the age that they get wrapped. And then when you stop wrapping them, you want to do things like change them to the long sleeve bodysuit. And all of these little things can affect their sleep cycles, their nighttime, getting from one sleep cycle to the next, and the daytime, of course.
Yeah. So what would be your top tips then for teaching a baby to self-settle if they don't know how to?
So if they don't know how to, you follow the routine for 5 days.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, if they've got a dummy and they're aided to sleep with a dummy, you follow the routine for 5 days and you let them continue to have a dummy. On the sixth day, you take the dummy away and you teach them how to self-settle, following the self-settling advice in the book.
Mm-hmm.
So the main thing with my advice is you put them in bed and you let them have a yell for a certain amount of time, as long as possible. The timing is worked out on what we think the mum can deal with. A lot of mums can't deal with listening to their baby crying or yelling or protesting. It is a protest cry. It's not an emotional cry.
What's the difference between the two?
So a protest cry is, I don't want to go to sleep. I don't want to go to sleep. Don't leave me here. I don't want to go to sleep. An emotional cry is, I'm hungry. I want mummy. I'm hungry. I need mummy. I'm hungry. It's a different, and the cry itself is different. So a protest cry changes. So it's like, I need. Now, this is only in a young baby. We're only talking about babies pre-solids. We do not worry about emotional cries in babies past solids because it's not hunger.
Mm-hmm.
The reason why we worry about an emotional cry in a small baby is maybe they are hungry. Mm-hmm. Yes, you would worry about an emotional cry in an older child, but you'd think, could it be teeth? Could it be an pain? Ear infection?
Yeah, because it would be out of the ordinary.
Because it wouldn't be that they're hungry because they're on solids and we can see what they're eating.
Yeah.
Okay? So an emotional cry in a baby is like, wah, 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 wah.
Eerily.
And it does not change. It doesn't change. Yeah. There's no, it doesn't go, wah, 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 wah. It's just
continuous.
Wah, 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 wah. And they do not take a gap. They don't need to take a gap. It's like eerie. They can breathe while they're doing it.
Yeah.
It's so strange that they can do it, but they can do it.
Well, it's like natural instincts with, you know, animals and stuff that have had to call out for their parents for hours on end, you know, to come back at home and feed them. You know, I think people still forget that we are still very animalistic.
Yeah.
You know, especially baby. They can't communicate their needs. They are relying on the
Talking of animals, a totally random thing. We went to the zoo with the children during the school holidays. Kieran wanted to go to Melbourne Zoo. We hadn't been to Melbourne Zoo in ages. And they were telling us about these gorillas at Melbourne Zoo. And one of the gorillas had been born to one mum there, but she's never seen her mum have a baby.
Mm-hmm.
So she won't have learned how to feed. I don't understand that. How can it not be natural? They were saying that they got all of these humans to come. So when her mother mm-hmm. was going to have a baby. They wanted her to learn how to feed. They got all these humans to come. They lined them all up. They got the gorilla to watch the humans breastfeeding. Mm-hmm. They were trying to teach her by watching. I don't think it worked. But they're now saying that they've got this gorilla. She's at the age, like she's about 8 or something, and they're going to try and, with COVID, they haven't been able to, but they mm-hmm. were going to try and find her another gorilla family to go to. Where, but they were worried that her mum had never had a baby, so she'd never seen, after her, mm-hmm. so she'd never seen her mum feeding. I find it so weird that it that the gorilla wouldn't just, not, like a giraffe is born and it just sucks. Mm-hmm. An elephant's born and it just sucks. How come a gorilla has a baby gorilla, and if it hasn't seen a mother feed, it doesn't know what to do? I don't understand it.
Maybe we're more closely related to them than we know.
But it's so weird. But even with us, like when our baby's born, it knows how to find the breast. It naturally can crawl and find the breast. Why would a gorilla not be able to feed it? Off topic, but I just don't understand why. Of all the animals, they're saying that this animal will not, its baby just won't, it won't feed it. They have to intervene.
I guess if Melbourne Zoo's around,
I just find it so strange,
yep.
You know. But with our babies, we do need to teach them
mm-hmm.
the skill of sleeping and settling and resettling and sleep cycles and so on. And it is very, very difficult because when your baby is first born, if you haven't read the book, you just presume that they will continue to sleep the way they mm-hmm. are. And then hit 8 weeks, boom, they're awake.
Mm. And I think a lot, you know, too, that sometimes when, you know, people think that we, you know, sleep train and things like that, but it's more looking at.
See, I don't call it sleep training.
No, but I'm going with what, you know, people say to us, but. It's more about looking at the environment to give a baby a full sleep, you know, making sure that they're warm and they're full and they're not in pain. Because generally, and, you know, that they're on the right team, they had enough awake time and things, and when it follow, you know, not necessarily putting them down at the first sight of tiredness, you know. All those things, you often find that the baby doesn't, there is no need for a cry or anything like that.
But this is why I'm saying, I say a lot, prevention is better than a cure. Why not have a baby? But then, you know, we have got clients who have the book, they've read the book, they want to follow the book, they try to follow the book, and then when their baby is born, they're so overwhelmed by anxiety or other things, postnatal depression, it just, they can't do it. They don't know what to do. And if you end up like that, then, you know, ask for help, go to your GP. It's not, you can get back on the Save Our Sleep train at some other point.
Yeah, if that's what you want to do.
But it might not be what you want to do. You might want to follow Save Our Sleep. You might desperately want to follow Save Our Sleep, but you just might not be able to get your baby to do it.
Yeah.
And that can happen. And it doesn't happen when you come to stay with Tizzy Hall, because you come to me and, as we said before, I burp the baby, burping, burping, burping. I keep the baby awake. I stimulate the baby. I distract the mum and everything's perfect. It's like the mum is telling fibs when she says that she's got this baby at home and it doesn't sleep and it doesn't this and it doesn't that. And then I get the mum to put the baby in the car from Melbourne normally and drive down to me at the first sleep time. So then they arrive and the baby's had a really good sleep. And then we follow the routine and this baby is absolutely perfect. But a lot of it is because if you're anxious, the baby is going to pick up on your anxiety.
Yeah.
And the more anxious you are, the more the baby's going to pick up on the anxiety. So sometimes, no matter how hard you try, Save Our Sleep won't work for you.
Mm-hmm.
And that's okay. You're not a failure. You just have to find what will work for you, or you need to go and reach out and talk to someone or talk to a friend and get them to help you with your baby. So and that you can get it to work for you.
And some of the other times too, when it's not working, there may be, you know, something underlying with Bub, like reflux and things that need to be looked at.
Or the baby might have a sore neck.
Yeah.
It might have need to see someone. You don't know. Like there might be, or sometimes babies are just really, really sleepy and they just don't wake up and take good feeds.
Yeah.
And that's when, you know, you have to kind of help them wake up by stripping them down. But even some mothers do that and they still don't feed well.
Yeah.
And then you've got to look for things like tongue tie and...
Yeah, there's so many different things and it doesn't, you know, SOS might not work for everyone.
Save Our Sleep might not work for everyone.
Save Our Sleep might not work for everyone. And
it does work for everyone if they come and stay with Tizzy, but you can't all come and stay with Tizzy. No. And so other factors affect it.
Yeah, you know? And we've got to look at that. And, you know, sometimes, you know, your mental health has to be a priority.
Yes.
And then later down the track, it can be revisited.
And sometimes you just need to go, do you know what? It's I'm going to teach my baby how to sleep, even though I say don't sleep train. I say, let's not sleep train. Let's say prevention's better than a cure. But sometimes you just got to go, do you know what? I'm going to get my baby up at this time. I'm going to feed them. I'm going to play with them in their awake time. And tiny babies don't play. Awake time is like feeding, burping, changing nappy, feeding, burpee, changing nappy. Now they've spewed on me again, cleaning myself, cleaning them. All right. And then into bed. And then you put them into bed and then you leave them in bed till the next feed time and then you go and get them up. And stop looking at them. Stop going, are they awake? Are they asleep?
Oh, watching that camera.
Watching them. Like, it's listening. Just don't have the camera. It just will drive you insane.
Turn but it off.
Try, like, if you have a job and you put them down, you've got to go and do your job. Those babies are the perfect sleepers because they're just left to it.
Mm-hmm.
They do learn that bed means bed and up means up. And they very quickly learn it.
Mm.
And sometimes you've just got to do that. Sometimes if you've tried everything else, you'll see that in the support group we go, do you know what? You've tried everything. Your baby is warm enough. Your baby is well fed. Your baby just needs to be put in bed and got up at the next feed time. And you need to, obviously, if the baby's screaming an emotional cry, you wouldn't leave.
No.
But if they're just having a bit of a sucker, a bit of a yell, and you are at your point in your mental health where you can't take it anymore, it is okay to say, bed means bed. I'm going to go and listen to a podcast for half an hour.
And sometimes it's easier if perhaps, you know, Nan or grandpa or cousin, aunt, uncle can actually come for that sleep time.
But sometimes it isn't. Because sometimes they are the ones who are driving you, oh, what are you doing? Oh, what are you doing? You shouldn't wake a sleeping baby. True. And what this and what that. And sometimes the dads are the worst because the dad's like, he's crying. Aren't you going to pick him up? And it's like, he's not crying. He's having a little bit of a protest because I've had enough and he needs to learn how to sleep. Yes.
And get someone that is okay with, you know, listening to it. Because sometimes, like I know for me, when I would hear the cry, I almost, like, it was paralyzing.
And most babies following Save Our Sleep don't cry. And there's more crying when you're teaching them how to sleep, even though I say because we don't need to sleep change or we don't need to sleep train.
No.
Okay, but we do to a certain degree if you've never followed Save Our Sleep and you've come along, or if it's all gone crap from day one or something's gone wrong, there will be. And if you keep a diary, the crying will get less and less.
Well, that's it. Like, you know, when I first started with my daughter at 6 months, you know, it was 10 minutes, it was 5 minutes, and then it was 3 minutes, and then it was nothing, you know. And then every now and then, you know, she might go for a minute or two, you know. And it was more just settling sounds when, you know, it wasn't full on. It was just like
And sometimes it turns into singing eventually.
Well, one sounded actually like a whale one time, so that was pretty funny.
So let's have a listener's question.
Sure. So we have Samantha Ann, and her question is, how do you tackle daylight savings?
So daylight savings is interesting. It's a funny time of the year. I can't stand daylight savings because we get all of these emails and people want to know, are the clocks going back or the clocks going forward? And then I've got the clocks in Ireland going forward or back and the clocks here going back or forward. And which way is it? And then New Zealand, Australia, different times. And then some states have it and some states don't. And then people decide that they're going to be really helpful like you and they're going to put a post up saying daylight savings, follow this. And then they forget to put one up and then people start contacting me going,
when do we? Yeah.
Oh, only half of the advice is up now. The good news is that we've got the daylight savings in the app.
Awesome.
So if you've got an iPhone, you can have or an iPad, you can have the Save Our Sleep app and daylight savings can be in there. It adjusts for you. What we do is we start adjusting the baby 5 days before daylight savings. Mm-hmm. Is it 5 days or 4 days?
I think it's five.
Four or five.
Depending on the age too.
Days before. And we adjust the routines by a certain amount of time.
Mm.
So that you adjust it at a certain sleep of the day and then the feeds all adjust and then you adjust it again the next day and again. So by the time daylight savings hits, you're on the new times.
Yeah.
So daylight savings is actually quite easy to do if you remember to do it and if your baby's on a routine.
Mm-hmm.
I think it would be much harder if your baby wasn't on a routine.
Yeah, I think so too. Especially all of a sudden they're waking up earlier and earlier and you're like, oh my goodness.
Yeah. And then before daylight savings, we have so many babies who start waking up at like 5:30, 6 o'clock. And then you're thinking, and everyone's like, help, help, help. And I'm thinking, can you just give it a week, guys? Because in a week, this is going to be... And then you think it's good for a few days and then some of these babies still do have issues. But other babies, it disappears because they were getting ready for daylight savings.
It's really odd.
Ahead.
I actually found, you know, with my three children, that a sleep routine change needed to occur with every daylight savings.
Hmm. That's interesting.
Hmm. So.
Who was up with that question?
That was Samantha Ann.
So Samantha Ann, don't forget to go to the Instagram account or the fan page and write underneath the photo of this podcast that you are the person who gets a $20 gift voucher for Fantastic. This one. So she want what did she so daylight have we covered it? So daylight yeah. savings.
How do you tackle daylight savings?
Well, with daylight savings you tackle it ahead of time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard too if your brother lives on the other side of the world because it changes. Like there's certain times you wouldn't know this because your family's in Australia.
Yeah.
There's certain times of where like it's easy to phone home because the clocks like you're early in the morning is there, not so late in the evening. But then when daylight savings happens, it shoots everything and then suddenly you can never phone home because they're always asleep where you're always it's always the wrong time, which is very frustrating. But with daylight savings, the tips are you've got the app if you've got an iPhone or iPad.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have it on Android. We're not getting an Android. Or you follow the book and you start adjusting it 4 or 5 days before so that by the time daylight savings comes, mm-hmm. your baby is adjusted. So you adjust everything by 20 minutes
yep.
and then the next day, 20 minutes.
So I know it's in the baby book. Is it in the toddler book as well? Yes. Fantastic. Yep.
So you, and as I said, you adjust it.
As you go. Yeah.
As a few days before.
Yeah.
And if for any reason you forgot to adjust it a few days before, I would adjust it from when you realise that you've forgotten about daylight savings.
That's it.
Yeah.
Beautiful, guys.
Thank you. We will be back with
midweek
crack. We'll be back with midweek crack on Wednesday. Talk Excellent. To you then. Bye. Bye. You have been listening to the Save Our Sleep podcast, brought to you by the International Baby Whisperer Proprietary Limited. You will find more information about the Save Our Sleep philosophy, products, support, and how to watch the mini clips that accompany this podcast at saveoursleep.com. You may find the Save Our Sleep social media accounts by searching Tizzy Hall on Instagram, Facebook, or Twitter. Please subscribe to my YouTube channel for all my how-to videos and to watch the podcasts. If you enjoyed the podcast, please rate it and share it with your friends. I would like to thank Kylie Zabo for co-hosting, Fundamental Studios Geelong for their amazing recording studio, Nick Dale at Primer Films for this production, and most of all, you, the listeners. Without you, there would be no reason for this podcast. Please enjoy, stay safe, and Kylie and I will look forward to chatting with you again soon.